Welcome, everybody, to the Pacific Novel Project workshop. I am your host, Jason Keith, and my co-host is Steve Childress.
Hello.
So Steve and I are working on our novels, and we workshop them every 2 weeks, and we put it out there for people to check out and follow along and have discussions about, you know, writing and writing methods and workshop and just seeing what that looks like in the real-time process.
You'd think it'd be more exciting, but sometimes it is.
Oh man, it's super exciting.
It is super exciting.
Yep. And we are both graduates from Pacific University, which is our unofficial namesake up here in the great wild Northwest. Rainy, greeny, a little bit chilly.
Waiting for an earthquake.
Waiting for our turn for an earthquake. Man, I don't even know. When was the last time this place had an earthquake? Been a long time, hasn't it?
Oh, God. I mean, seismic activity, maybe. I think maybe last month there was a small one or a couple small ones. Oh. But as far as like something serious, I mean, maybe like St. Helens erupting as far as seismic activity goes, but
yeah, you're talking to a guy from California. I don't want to hear about no regular old seismic activity.
Oh, okay.
Although we do have big-ass volcanoes, we're known for our lava up here.
Yeah, you know, you gotta have some lava love, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. At least it'll be warm.
True.
All right, so we're working on our books. Mine is The Ghosts of Silver Creek. Steve's is Hollywood Dreams. And I believe Steve is going first today, which means he gets to talk first.
Yeah. We're going to talk a little bit about Ghost of Silver Creek. Where we left off last week was finishing up the round robin at the table in the McMahon's house, where a bunch of the nesters got together to talk about their collective Brody problem. They had some people that didn't show, some people that sold out, but everybody's pretty on board with trying to make something for themselves happen. And we start with Avis sitting with Charles on their ox-pulled wagon. And Virginia gets her chance to ride Keela. And this is, we're on page 116.
No, Virginia doesn't ride Keela.
Oh, no, it's, yeah, that's right. Virginia doesn't. It's Elsa. I read that wrong. Okay, so page 116, we have Avis sitting with Charles on the wagon. And she goes into having another vision of this castle incorporated into this giant tree. I guess I'm just going to go chronologically with comments. Let's see here. I like that we come back to this vision from this other realm with this tree and castle and the glowing peoples from, I guess it was a ball. That was part of the first vision. Yeah. And I know we got a little taste of this tree and castle in the previous vision, but I find myself wanting a bit more of how this looks from this different perspective. Cause it's almost like it's pulled back and we're getting an opportunity to maybe have a little bit more of an idea of like how this castle fits in this tree and how the two are converged into one another. And I almost wonder if there would be like any banners or sigils or anything on this castle like that could possibly have symbols for Avis to take away from it. I mean, nothing like too crazy. I mean, you don't have to go like James Fenimore Cooper, but Yeah, just a little bit of more description how this tree looks and this castle looks from this other perspective, because I because it was yeah, it intrigued me and I was like, I want to know more.
Okay. Want to know more?
Do your part. Would you like to know more? Oh man, I love that movie. So another thing I did like about this part was Avis is like basically like, I guess for all intents and purposes, she moved closer as if flying. So she's kind of like, it made me think of astral projection. Like she has projected herself to this place in this vision, and she's able to move about it. And especially as she tries to get closer to the woman in brown, that's glowing. As she gets closer, the lady glows with more intensity, and she actually ends up seeing less. So yeah, I liked that that idea of like her kind of being disembodied and flying. There's a sentence here I thought needed some TLC. I kind of played with it a little bit, but you might look at it. Again, it was the threads that connected the world she woke in, and the world of the woman in the brown dress reeled her closer. The way it was written before my edits, I just got confused and it took me out.
Okay.
So might take a closer look at it. All right, page 117. We get this apprehension with, and this is post vision. We get this apprehension with Avis about trying to approach the subject with the war, enslaving orcs and fighting for the side that supported slavery, and Avis having a real issue with this. But it, trying to figure out how I want to say this.
It sucked.
No, not saying that. I was trying to figure out how I wanted to explain it without getting like, you know, just totally like rambly. Throw caution to the wind, right? Who wants to live forever? But Avis is trying to figure out how to approach the subject, and she kind of uses Charles's manners and how he carried himself at the McMahon Ranch, and she just ends up kind of saying, you really care about those people, Avis said softly. Yes, Charles said. And then she drops the bomb on him like, you owned people. And then he explains to her that he didn't. And he kind of goes into this idea that he fought for the side he fought for because his home was being invaded. And so for him, he had a different stake in it than just a bunch, you know, than just being like one of the poor people that are fighting for the rich landowners that are also slavers. So for him, it's not just a black and white situation. And I thought that was interesting for argues his choices. See, one second here. Yeah, here it is. Avis, you owned other people, she said, and it was difficult to prevent it from sounding like an accusation. No, I never did. She cast him a suspicious gaze. You fought with an army to keep slaves. That I did. Why? The accusatory tone shifted to desperate with want to understand the man who had shown her and others nothing but kindness. He comes back with, Tennessee was my home. An army invaded it. My friends' homes were destroyed. Many were killed. He had a faraway look in his eyes. I didn't know what else to do. So he had his reasons. Yeah, I think it works. Definitely adds more to him as a character.
Good.
On page 119, about halfway down, no. She would not punish Charles for his past, but neither would she give him a pass on his... It says tolerance, but is that supposed to be intolerance or ignorance?
It's supposed to be tolerance. It's tolerance of you know, slavery.
Oh, okay. Okay, because, yeah, I wasn't sure what the tolerance was going toward. A couple of minor edits, just word, just cutting a word and changing a word from off to offer. Down at the bottom of 119, Amos began to undress when the Palomino's head shot up and his ears rotated to the head. Amos began to undress when the Palomino's head shot up and his ears rotated to the red door?
The rear.
Rear door of the barn. Amos also felt it. Whether it was her own instinct or her connection to Keela, she was not sure. The companion walked to the wide mouth of the barn door. Now, is the companion Keela?
Yeah.
Okay, it just didn't fall real clear for me.
Okay.
So, yeah. See, page 120. Some subtle shift in nature had happened, but she could not pin the moment or location it occurred. As if its presence was being masked from her. She would have thought she was imagining it, too, if it had not been obvious. Keela had felt it. And I like this sense of unease that's hitting Avis at home, basically, in the barn she's come to call home. It also suggests that she is at a disadvantage to what I assume is the Dark Rider watching her, or some other party that's ghosting her or whatnot. It kind of makes, outside of the Brody issue, this place feel, I guess, a little bit more unsafe.
Yeah. Okay.
It's kind of where anyway. A couple small edits on the rest of this page. Nothing too crazy.
Page 120.
Yeah, 120. She heard things that made their survival nocturnally. I was just changing a couple words up there in that sentence. Page 121. I really didn't have any comments on this page, but I did like that they missed the telegraph from Cleveland, and it got to the telegraph office, and that Chalk is I think Chalk did this originally when he sent the cable out, was like tapped into the telegraph lines and sent out the communique originally to Cleveland. So, but it's all coded. So Joshua's like, well, it's all coded, so it should be fine. But still, it's like, you know, he doesn't know who he can trust. And this is kind of one of those examples of like, he knows he's playing a precarious game. 122. A repeating Spencer rifle was cradled in the crook of her arm. Joshua knew he was looking at Francine and Remy McMahon. Now, I think in the previous draft, we didn't see either of them this early, or if at all. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Remy actually got eliminated from the first draft.
That's right. Yeah, and then Francine, she kind of, I guess,
appeared mysteriously.
Yeah, yeah. So I like that we get to meet them while they're on this visit to Silvertip to visit with Teague and try to talk to the law about the Brodies, which really doesn't go well from them, from what Joshua notices, because they look real sour when they come out of the bank. Okay, page 123. One second here. Yes, this is where we meet the Silvertip Council, which is made up of Grimfist, Cooper Teague, Dale Sykes, the general store owner, Sweeney Corden, looks like an older version of his stable boy son, and Robert Chapman. Yeah, we basically meet all the powerhouses of Silvertip, and we get a little background on them, which I thought was good. I liked that we get, you know, like who they are, what their establishments are, a little bit about their alignments, if you will. And I liked that we got some details about Grimfist, because Grimfist and Joshua aren't strangers, so having that little bit of details there definitely works.
Cool.
Now, the council meeting wasn't in the bank before, was it? Wasn't it in the back room of...
church.
Oh, it was in the church. Okay. Okay, and this time it's in the bank.
Yeah, I just didn't think the church would be in the center of Main Street.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, that works. Yeah, I thought the bank worked. I mean, you know, we're godless land barons and commerce devils gonna spend their time, but in a bank. But yeah, this as far as the interactions go, a lot of the interactions between Stone and the characters from the council, they feel pretty much a lot like the previous draft as far as dialogue and interaction. Like Stone asking, Sykes to step outside. I do remember that from the last draft. So yeah, it was good to see some of this come back and see some new stuff as well. So page 126, I didn't really have much to comment there. 127, this is where we get to see the inside of Slim's, which is Grimfist's House of Ill Repute and Billiard Hall, and talks about, he speaks for the other business owners in the town of how they feel about the Brodies. And really, I mean, even for Pitt, the Brodies are good for business because the Brodies hire people. Those people come into town and buy things and pay ladies of the night to hang out with. And it's good business for Pitt. So the other business owners, I think, are pretty much on the same wavelength there. So I thought that was good. I mean, it give you a little bit of info on the town and the connection to the Brodies.
Cool beans. I think that was the last page, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the last page. And basically, I think the moments between Avis and Charles, I mean, they felt very much like the last draft. I think there was a couple things that kind of filled out moments between them a little bit. Yeah. Feels like a second draft. So I'm liking the direction. You have any questions for me?
I don't think I do.
Fair enough.
All right, let's switch over to Hollywood Dreams, page 114. The body of Nancy Kaminsky has been identified by the brother. They told the brother to go chill at his hotel while they went and picked up some pictures of Nancy's, because brother had his little picture stub in the old days when we'd turn our photos into somebody else to be developed, and they'd, you know, give us a receipt and we'd go back and pick it up. I believe we were talking about a little bit earlier that, so we left off, they were concerned that the brother might be in danger because he wasn't making any bones about looking for his sister. Monty went to guard him while Tomb went to go talk to Danny. So now, he was going to go talk to Anton, a gallery owner who was investigating a watch, a Nazi watch. That was their clue, one of their clues. And we were talking earlier, you wrote this gallery scene here, but you're probably going to move it backward before all those other scenes happen.
Yeah, it's a time jump as far as where it's sitting right now, but its location will be earlier in the story. It's just to be determined where exactly that'll be.
Yeah, alrighty. So we'll just read the scene the way it is, not in connection with the timeline thing.
Sounds good.
Overall, I like this scene. I did have a question about, okay, yeah, so page 114, near the bottom gallery exhibition scene, you've labeled it. Makes it very clear.
Indeed.
So I was just wondering, you talk about the stained glass windows, a few street lamps. So the description of this stained glass windows just sounded kind of old and churchy to me.
Okay.
Not necessarily means that all galleries need to be in brand new modern art buildings, but I don't know. Just something to consider.
Okay.
I think I'd like, and if you do keep the glass stained windows, I think I'd just kind of like a description of the entire building, maybe a tomb's impression of it.
Okay, that's doable.
A few street lamps cut through the evening obscurities. I was not sure what you were going for there. Obscurities? Did you mean like that's dark?
Yeah, just that when it's dark out, you don't always see things as they always are.
Like there was a lot of rich people in this place, right? Or at least medium, if not rich.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely people with money.
It seems like it'd be more nicer area. It sounds like a bad area of town. Also, I kind of picture like valets and shit. Because rich people, they don't like to park their own damn car.
Right?
So anyway.
I'll look into that.
I like this sentence. I like the... I think it's the second sentence? The third sentence. I liked what you're trying to portray there. I rewrote it into like a little shorter thing. The night is where... Oh, I wrote extra words. Let me delete this extra word. Extra two words. The night is where the disguise try to convince you they are something else. I just thought it flowed a little bit smoother than it's always the night where things hide the best or convince you they're something else.
I like it.
Yeah, I think Toon could just say, I mean, this is what he thinks. So just.
Yeah, I like it.
Man, I really went off on this section. not like bad way. I mean, it's been a long time since I've edited this much of like a first draft of something. I open the door. I open the passenger door for Anna, and she steps out of the car. Her purple gown has the appeal of a magnificent bruise or a marvelous plum in the dark. I think you can get rid of her stepping out of the car. I think you just say Anna steps out of the car, and she looks, you know, amazing in this dress. And I liked this description, magnificent bruise.
Aye, thank you.
And the dark, you know, the dress is plum. But since I wasn't actually sure, since you said in the dark, I wasn't sure if the dress was a different color and just looked purple at night.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that does. Yeah, I gotcha.
And the sentence I shortened up a little bit too. Her flowing locks are curled and pinned back the way Vivian would do her own hair for formal events. Because it was pinned, but they were flowing, but I wasn't sure how they'd be flowing if they're pinned. So I just put her flowing locks are curled and pinned back. I kind of picture them like pinned back to the upper part of her head and then being long in the back. I think that was what you were going for.
That's how I pictured it. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, okay, cool. And I like that. I like that he has this like kind of choked up moment seeing, you know, his daughter who he loves resembling, you know, his dead wife.
All right, cool.
Top of 115. He's talking about like it's all his willpower not to start crying. And then Monty comes up. Aren't you the cat's whiskers? That's great. I don't know why cat's whiskers would mean, you know, good looking or something special, but it's kind of funny. And
thank you.
So he kind of gives Toon a little crap about, you know, him being ugly and her being hot. And Anna comes to her defense and says, don't you get punched in the kisser. Yeah. So I like that. I like that. She comes to her defense. I'm not amused. I answer. Hiding my actual mild smile. I had a hard time picturing that because, I mean, what was he doing? Holding his hand up? Or does that mean he like wanted to smile, but he was trying to keep a poker face?
Poker face. I'll have to find a better way to say that.
Monty's like, not amused, party of one, table's ready. And then just made another shortened sentence suggestion. Anna takes my offered arm as we head toward the building. Instead of I hold out my arm and Anna takes it, we start toward the building.
Okay. That works.
And I didn't think, I lined out and we both know nobody likes you, I say, and keep walking. And I think we just sit there walking.
Okay.
We know they're going inside the gallery, so I lined out the gallery and just put inside the expedition is in full swing.
That totally works, yeah. I see, yeah.
And then I did a rewrite suggestion for these ushers who are helping them. I didn't know if one was taking their coat and their ticket and the other guy was taking them to the viewing room, or if the second guy took their ticket and went to the viewing room. I wrote it as he took their cute ticket and went to the viewing room, but you know, either way, it was a little confusing the way it was written.
Okay, cool. I'll look at that.
And then from the very bottom of 115 going to 116, I made a rewrite suggestion for this sentence with the women and the men making their small talk and stuff. I think that's easy, kind of easy to picture. I like the idea of this. You had them talking about the, you know, over the wine between them and stuff. So I try to keep that flavor about it, but make it a little shorter and less wordy. This second line here, paintings line the wall and sculptures speckle the floor. I know what you're going for there, but I don't know if speckle is the right word.
Yeah, I didn't think speckle was the right word at the time either, but I was like, I'll just use it and move on. But yeah, I agree.
And I didn't give any suggestions because I was lazy. And when you right click in Google Docs, it's not as cool as MS Word that immediately gives you a bunch of cinnamons. Yum, cinnamon.
Yay, that, yum.
I love cinnamon.
Cinnamon is pretty good.
Cinnamons. All right.
Especially when they're in rolls.
So you described this painting. The woman in the tree and the stone ruins. I thought that was pretty cool. I like that Tomb sees this and is affected by it. My only question... Oh, yeah, then I had a question if this was a real painting or something. Yeah, you just kind of made up.
It is a real painting, and it's actually still missing from World War II.
Oh, from World War II. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
I see stolen. You linked me something in chat.
I did.
I'll look at that in a little bit. So after that paragraph, Anna asked him a question, asked her dad a question about it. Hey, it's pretty. And he's like, yeah, sad way. And then a guy comes by with some champagne and he downs it. And she's like, dude, have a drink. Don't lush it up.
Exactly.
All right. Page 117. We have all the moments we need to be alone, Monty, even when the sun is shining. Well, maybe I shouldn't have skipped that. Oh, yeah, Monty comes up and they're talking about the painting. Oh, no, they're looking at a new painting that's happy.
Yes.
A bright and colorful park. And Monty comes over and says that she looks pretty happy for someone being all alone. And Anna says, well, even when the sun is shining, sometimes we need to be alone. What is a cookie pusher? There are a lot of cookie pushers here, Tomb.
Wealthy young women.
Okay. How does cookie pushing equate to wealthy young women?
Well, we'd have to go back to the 30s to find out, I guess.
I do. Oh, it didn't explain it.
Well, it just said wealthy young women is what it meant, is what the slang term meant, is what the meaning was.
Interesting.
I couldn't find a complete thing about it.
Interesting, because sometimes we can like just determine, you know, make a guess as the connection. But this one, I was just like, man, what is that? How's that connected?
Right. Okay. Yeah.
I don't think that matters. I don't think it needs to be explained or anything. I was just, I think it's fine. We're 100 pages in and you've been using 30 slang throughout. I think a reader will be like, even if, like me, like even though I didn't know the connection, it didn't take me out or anything because it was just another funny little colloquialism.
Right. I'm glad it didn't take you out. I'm glad it wasn't, didn't break that, that reading up.
All right. So Anna disappears and then Anton shows up. Yo, Elijah, what up, bro? And Elijah's like, hey, got any news for me? He just goes right to business. So they go to his office. On his way to his office, there's a World War I painting. And then I ask the same question, is that a real painting? But then it ended up being done by his son, so I'm guessing it's not.
Yeah, it's not a real painting. Nope.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of amazing World War I art out there. A lot of it done by actual soldiers. They had, if you want to see some crazy shit, just Google World War I art.
Oh, dude, yeah, I've looked at quite a lot of that stuff, and yeah, there's some really macabre stuff, and just some beautifully sad kind of things, like. I don't know, like gray skies and torn. Yeah, just dude.
Yeah, they had an exhibition of World War I art a couple years ago at the Portland Museum.
No, nice. That would have been cool to check out. Did you make it there for that?
Yeah, I did. I did go down there because I was actually in the World War I class at the time, and we went there as like a field trip.
Oh, nice. I bet you that was cool to see that stuff, up close and in person.
Yeah. And it was kind of heart wrenching.
I bet.
Let's see. Anyway, it's just a description of this painting, distant gunfire, shelling, weather vane, top what is left of a building. It's just, anybody listening can picture something that looks like it's been exploded to hell and back and get the idea.
Yeah, pretty much.
There's blood. There's like some blood here, right? Oh yeah, blood. Blood from the wound wafts in the back of an ambulance. Oh, that's him. That's Tomb's flashback.
Yes.
Which is even worse than the picture. Okay.
Yeah, I kind of felt it. I kind of felt it probably had to be.
Yeah. All right, page 118, they're in the office. Page 118, they're entering the office because Monty is kind of snaps to Mama's daydream. He asks Anton a couple questions about him and Danny's relationship, whether or not they, share employees or anything. And he says sometimes they share security guards, but that's it. Otherwise, their business is pretty separate. I didn't have anything to say on the rest of that page. Oh, the champagne flute, him dropping his cigarette and Monty's champagne flute. I thought was funny. I was wondering if maybe you could put like have some champagne still in it. It'd be even funnier.
I had thought about that. I was like, ooh, I should, maybe I should. I don't know. But I think I'm liking your suggestion to go with it. Yeah, because
he just saw this thing. He just had this flashback. Monty's kind of bugging him and like, there you go, buddy.
Right. Here, hold this for me.
All right. So they're leaving it. They're leaving the office, and Tombstam stays back, and he takes a shot of bourbon, and then pours himself one for the road. And they, the only comment I made on this page was like, so much for lushlessness.
When Tomb's around, yeah, it's pretty much it's an uphill battle.
If that's not an officially sanctioned word, it should be.
It should be. I agree.
And he comes out, and Anna is looking at that World War I picture, and she asked if that's what it was like, and he was like, yeah, I mean, it was pretty bad, but I don't really want to talk about it. Page 120, Monty gets ballsy again, tells me she should have some counseling or something. I think I added a line there. All right. Line space. So they're leaving. I was a little confused why Anna was in such a hurry to leave. I'd go to the studio if I wanted to feel like I'm still at work. I wasn't sure what that meant.
Oh, I was just kind of going with it's kind of stuffy in there, and if I wanted to feel like I was at work, I'd go to the studio.
Oh, stuffy as in stuffed shirts?
Yeah, stuffed shirts, you know.
Oh, okay. Oh, man. So I picture this the opposite. So my comments were, overall, I like this gallery scene. I'd like to see, because Anna works in, since she works in film and she wants to work in film, she seems like an artsy person to me. I'd like to see Richter come up to them while he's with Anna and have Anna be like, oh, like this additional missing work art thing you sent me. Like, oh, you know, I love this painting, this by so-and-so, and the lines and the whatever and the freaking whatever goofy things people Meyer paintings say to each other.
Right.
Yeah. I think that'd have been cool. Showed more on Anton, showed more her. You know, showing her the gorgeous, smart woman that she's grown up to be. I think I'd like to see more of that. I want this gallery scene to be longer, actually.
Okay.
Not wasteful, but longer.
True. I mean, I agree. I mean, I really wanted to make Anna stand out more in this gallery scene, but I'm not an art major. Yeah. I was just like, oh, so I was like spending way too much time trying to kind of work things with her in that fashion. Maybe I should.
Yes, Sarah's in that shit.
All right. Stuff. But yeah,
Sarah,
I mean,
Sarah, if you're listening, I'm in stuff.
But I like the suggestion, and I was like, yeah, it's kind of where I wanted to start with her at in this scene.
I'd like to see some political talk there too.
Okay.
Good opportunity to show what my society was thinking back then.
True, true. Tensions, war tensions, all that.
People are drinking. Loosened up a little.
True, true. Yeah, I'm gonna make a note on that. And I'll look into doing that.
All right. And then of course we go back to Lou's Tavern, which is, I'm assuming, a different day. So this Lou's Tavern scene, is this actually immediately after this scene? Or is it before this scene?
No.
The comments were based on it being immediately like the next day after this scene.
Oh no, it's the next day after Toom goes and meets with Danny.
Okay. That makes more sense.
Yeah. Yeah. There was, I want to get to like Toom's like, oh, me first, show and tell. And then it kind of gets to like, okay, well, how's our guy?
Okay. Cause my first comment was he hands over the envelope and it's got Silver Medic Studio letterhead on it and stuff. And I'm like, wait, what? Cause I assumed it was the envelope that Anton gave him.
No, yeah, that'll be different.
All right. Ooh, and I spelled new wrong. That's funny. All right, the list from the Edgewater, which is the... Edgewater is the clue that they found in one of the dead girl's apartment place, or the dead Nazi's apartment place.
Yes, that was at Nancy's and Elsa's apartment.
Nancy's and Elsa's place. All right. So, yeah, so that's a fancy place, and that's where Nancy was found, and they found that clue in her apartment. So Toom is thinking maybe the killer was there or something is what I'm thinking.
So sheezy. Yeah, something along those lines.
121. Weston is, Monty Weston is unsure of how that list can help him, because... there's a lot of names, and he just thinks there's a lot of names. And the girls' names are on that list, and that's why he thinks the girls, the dead girl and the dead girl's sister, Elsa. And so Toom thinks that that's why it's going to be helpful. I think some of Monty's doubt comes from it being like a plush place, too, and them maybe not having access to those people, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be.
All right, so one of them had to meet up in a room in room 33. I think we should go back to Edgewatcher and see who rented that room. And that, I believe, is where we end.
Yep.
Sweet. All right. Like I said, I think the museum is a good start, and a lot of I like the interactions between the characters there, and I think there's looking forward to you fleshing out that scene. Good scene.
Yeah, I think it definitely has a lot of potential, and yeah, definitely adding political atmosphere to that could definitely really be interesting for sure. So yeah, I'm actually going to look forward to working on that. I'm going to probably research it before I rewrite it, of course. But
all right, cool, man. So I think that's going to be a wrap for tonight. I forgot the time of the episode, but I don't think it matters. We're not going to just put in extra stuff there. We didn't have as many sidebars this time around as we normally do.
No, we really didn't, but that's okay. We'll save the sidebars for something else.
All right. Thanks for joining us. If you're listening to this, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project. You can find more stuff there. Half of it's free. We got writing prompts and just general workshop talk, which you can have access to if you'd like to be a subscriber at the $1 level. You can have access to this week's manuscripts, which makes it easier to follow along and actually see the edits that we're talking about. And for $2, you'd get our 200-word short story challenge, which we are hoping to rename contest once we get enough people and give away prizes and stuff. And we also do a monthly book discussion podcast in your Bring Your Own Book Club. And we are currently reading, we just read The Sisters Brothers by DeWitt, which will be up soon. And we're about to record The Bird's Nest by Shirley Jackson.
And dude, The Bird's Nest, that is a wacky book, man.
Is it aptly named?
Oh, dude, I don't know. I like the prose. I like the stylings. I mean, it's really interesting. Just, it gets wacky.
It's certainly a different writing style. We talked before when we first started reading the book, just casually, that the first few pages, I was wondering if I was going to be able to read it.
Right. So this in the second chapter, there was times that I felt like I was reading a textbook. It's an interesting book.
Well, that's it. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. Thanks for checking us out. Hope you stick around. Please comment, like and subscribe, make comments about anything, really. Helps us get noticed, even if they're bad comments.
So say we all.
But if you're going to write bad comments, at least make them creative. I like creative stuff.
Yeah, I mean, at least take the time to badmouth us with some creativity.
All right. Good night, Steve.
Good night, Jason. And good night, everybody else. Thanks for listening.
And remember to write on.
So say we all.
Praise be.
May the Lord open.